This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Happy Friday and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown podcast. I'm Chris Cotillo, here with Sean McAdam. Red Sox have completed their first home series of the year, and boy, was it a bunch of fun if you like the Orioles or horrible defense. We'll get a little bit to that, but this is, for the first time in a couple weeks.
Rundown. Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry.
No, that's the intro. They already heard that, yeah. If ownership thinks people want to, that thing I screw up at the beginning of everyone, we need to re-record that. But this is a mailbag episode, and we haven't done these in a couple weeks, but it's always good to hear from you, the subscriber, the reader. Again, these questions do not come from Twitter, X, or Hellscape. That's a bunch of OnlyFans bots anyways nowadays, so it's good to have people that are, you know, people chiming in. And we do that via the Fenway Rundown Insider Text program. We plug it on every show, and by that I mean Sean plugs it on every show, but it's particularly useful for one of these mailbags.
Yes, this is where we derive our questions and fodder for these podcasts, Chris. And if you want to join in, get updates on the Red Sox, get the news first, be able to ask questions of any of us, and have your questions addressed on podcast episodes like this one, text the word join to 617-751-6257. Then click the link to subscribe. You will have a 14-day grace period to audit the program, after which you will undeniably fall in love with the idea and happily front us $4.99 monthly.
So we have 40 questions, as we say, when we send out the request. So we send out a text to everybody who subscribes. Hey, we're doing a mailbag. Do you have questions? If they do, we get them in. The way the software works is that that I cannot see every single question in full beforehand, and so it's a lot of jumping around once we're live on here. But I'm going to guess we have 40 questions. We're not going to get to all of them because there's a lot of repetition. There's a lot about the middle infield situation. So we will start there. Sean Palomar is the name I see, but a lot of people ask the same question, Sean. Is the team looking outside the organization to fill the need at shortstop with someone more defensively proficient than the current options that are being used? Peter Thibault, got it. Why does Cora say Hamilton is a good defender? He is not a good defender. He's not showing up at all. He's hurting the Sox. I understand having your players' backs, but stating what is obviously false is taking it too far. Someone, let me see in here. Chris Connor mentions Jose Iglesias at AAA. You know, can we expect middle infield? There's just a lot of questions about the shortstop position. Right now it's David Hamilton and kind of Romy Gonzalez platooning, but he's hurt as well. I mean, they are on extremely thin ice at shortstop. But right now it seems like just out of necessity, they're rolling with the guys they have.
Yeah. The other day, Craig Breslow was asked whether there would be any effort to look externally to upgrade the position or reinforce the middle infield. And he said he wanted to take a look at what they have internally. And I would add that, as is the case with almost every position, it is very difficult to execute a trade of any consequence on April 12th or wherever we are. Teams are just over 2 weeks into the season. Nobody has extra starting shortstop caliber players hanging around and taking up roster space. If you have some depth at that position, if you are fortunate and have prepared well enough that you have some good middle infield depth, you're not about to give it away 2 weeks into the season, because you know it's very likely that at some point you'll be facing that same issue where you need to go to your bench, where you have injuries and you need to have reinforcements. So the likelihood of Breslow being able to pry anything better away from other teams right now, I think, is slim, bordering on non-existent. Red Sox fans might not want to hear that, but that's just the truth about the industry, that it is very difficult to make trades this early in the year. If you do it, you're going to have to overpay greatly. And look, I understand wanting to see what's on hand and see if Hamilton can emerge, or see if Gonzalez in a platoon can help out, or take a look at what Valdez's improvement represents at second base. They have to get a sense here. Look, if it stays this bad for another week or two, then maybe they have to look into external options. I personally don't think Jose Iglesias is a major league shortstop anymore.
Probably fit right in.
Well, exactly. You know, you'd have to give the Mets something to get him. And how much of an upgrade would that be over what they have? I would argue that it is marginal. So I know this is not what people want to hear, but I'm afraid for now, what you see is what you get.
Yeah, Elvis Andrus is a free agent. Defensively, I think he's been horrendous the last couple of years, moving around short and second. You know, he signed a minor league deal with Arizona late in camp, got cut, didn't make the team. Is that guy an upgrade because he's a bigger name? Not necessarily. That's just a name that's out there. It does seem like they're sticking internally. We had a question about, you know, Romy Gonzalez is hurt, right? Yesterday we showed up at Fenway and he was in a splint or a cast or whatever that was. And someone, no name on, and we're not going to read your cell number out loud. If Romy Gonzalez heads to the IL, could we see Nick Sogard, right-handed bat, can play the middle infield? They can open a 40-man spot, that type of stuff. Like, that's the point they're getting to. You know, Nick Sogard, you know, Jamie Westbrook hasn't played much short, but some of these, like, really, really, you know, depthy
4A guys,
spring training guys. Not that, you know, I mean, Romy and Hamilton might be in that mix themselves, but I mean, we're talking about guys that the Grapefruit League All-Stars don't usually make a huge impact on the big league team. You know, Sogard, I think, is a guy Cora does like. I could see him coming up at some point, but it's April 12th and we're talking about this. It's crazy.
Yeah. And look, we can castigate Breslow and the front office for not making better preparation in anticipation of this issue. But, they had every evidence to believe that Trevor Story was over his elbow issue, had a normal off season. There was nothing, he got injured on what is essentially a freak accident, diving into the hole. His shoulder pops out. There's some damage. They may have to repair the labrum. Nobody could have anticipated that. And while you can say, well, they should have had other, you know, contingency plans, you can make that about argument about any injury that takes place. I think they believe that with, Reyes, they had a competent major league level quality utility guy, and that would serve them okay for the first half, after which maybe Marcelo Meyer is ready to contribute. I'm sure we're going to have the drums banging on him that he
good
should be.
Good tease to the next question, Sean.
He
good
should
job.
Be, speedily delivered to Jersey Street and make his major league debut tomorrow. That's not happening, nor should it happen. This is a guy who had injuries himself last year, who hasn't mastered Double A yet, let alone Triple A, let alone another big step up to the big leagues. You do not want to impact such an important player's development to fill a short-term need, especially when there's no evidence to suggest he's ready to make that jump.
Why even let me read the questions if you're just going to answer them?
Yeah, I can tell what the next question is going to be.
Know what's coming
next.
There
was a guy named Johnny Carson who once had a late-night talk show. I know that, you know, you'll disavow any knowledge of that because it happened mostly before you were born, but I'm just filling you in.
Yeah, I wasn't aware, but I appreciate the history lesson as always. We do have three questions on Marcelo Meyer. David Barrasso saying, I'm going to the Cincinnati series in late June. If he stays hot, what are the chances I see Marcelo Meyer at shortstop?
David, Scott, take a quicker drive up 95 to Portland. You can see all the Marcelo Meyer you want. You don't have to drive out to Cincinnati, Ohio to see him.
Scott Lodge asks, the better chance of happening first, Meyer gets called up to play short, or Anthony gets to call to play center, and Raffaello goes to shortstop. And John Coppolo asking, given the shortstop situation, might Marcelo Meyer be fast-tracked? As long as he shows sufficient progress in the minors, if he seems ready, there's not much to lose. Sean already answered it. I'll kind of echo what he said. I do think there is something to lose. The development steps that are so important for these guys. You know, if you're the Orioles, and someone else asked this question, I did see in the chat, you know, the Orioles and Braves calling up guys in their 20s, and why aren't the Reds early 20s? The Red Sox aren't doing that. You know, the Orioles and Braves are contending for a World Series, and they're at that stage, and they want the most talent on the field, and they're kind of going all in that way, right? That's why the Braves got Corbin Burns, and I mean, the Orioles get Corbin Burns, and those teams are going all in. The Red Sox right now, this is a transition year. It's a player development year. It's let's develop the core. That's what they said their goal was in January when they finally had the truth serum injected and finally told you, the good people, what they were actually doing instead of the full throttle BS. And so the fact that their chances of contending are way worse now with Giolito and Story out, that I think speaks to they're not going to make a panic move because those things happen. They're, you know, it's the same kind of logic as when Giolito goes down, the initial is, well, now they're going to go get Montgomery. No, it actually makes it less likely. And it's, I think the same thing applies here. It's like, well, Story's out. It's not, you know, you're hanging on in August and have a pretty good chance of making the playoffs and you need a boost. It's, well, now our chances went from, you know, X to X minus 5%, whatever, with Giolito and Story out. You're not going to rush Meyer, who, as Sean said, was hurt and does not have a lot of time at AA and not at AAA, or Anthony, who's not even 20, to what? Be potentially exciting on a bad team for 6 months. So there's development steps. They're very important to organizations now. And so I see, you know, zero chance of Meyer being the short-term solution. Again, with all these guys, and I think both of us have said on the show before that Kyle Teal is probably the most likely to make an impact by the end of the year. You know, their development will dictate. It's not about where the team is. It's not about a need. It's not about the fact Trevor Story's, you know, not here. These guys are not ready to be in the majors right now. And
right. And there's a lot
happens
people.
And there's a, you know, a lot of downside to putting them in the majors and having them fail early and the mental side of that. And they, you know, it's probably in the minds of the Red Sox, not worth it on a team that, you know, is, in their own words, it's about developing the core and not really about results.
And you hear a lot of people the last few days, particularly because the Orioles were in town and Jackson Holliday made his debut on Wednesday night at the ripe old age of 20. Well, if the Orioles can bring up a 20-year-old and have him play every day, why can't the Red Sox do the same to Meyer, who's, you know, who's older than that and has had more pro experience? The fact is that you cannot assume that all these players develop at the same time. Jackson Holliday was a 1-1, meaning he was the overall top pick in the game. He was the consensus choice as the best prospect in the game, and he was already tearing it up at AAA, albeit just for, you know, a week and a half here. But he had dominated every level last year. That's something that Meyer couldn't do last year because he was hurt. He essentially, you know, did very little after late May last season. He lost almost a half season's worth of development. So to ask him with such little preparation and development time in their system to come in and be the everyday shortstop here on a bad team serves nobody short or long term.
Yep, that I think is pretty clear. And, you know, maybe later in the year, Rick McShee, Mike Dabrowski also asked questions on that topic. And I think we kind of covered them before I said the name. So hope it did it justice. Another question on the middle infield from Daryl Genetti and from David Lee. David Lee asking, what's the status with Grissom? And Daryl asking, how bad is Grissom at shortstop? I know the metrics weren't kind to him, but they also weren't kind to Xander. He made the plays that needed to be made. I mean, I think that there's going to be a real conversation about giving Grissom some reps there, or, you know, revisiting the Rafaela conversation. I mean, they can't do this David Hamilton, Romy Gonzalez thing all the time. It's somehow, some way worse than Kike a year ago, especially if Romy has to go on the IL. Obviously, that's an issue. You know, Grissom, to me, kind of in the same vein of what we were just talking about, I think, like, out of necessity, maybe put him at short. But with the eye on the future and the eye on development, they view Rafaela as a center fielder. They want to keep him there. They view Grissom as a second baseman. They want to keep him there. And so, you know, I would probably explore it more than they seem to be. You wrote last week that you thought Rafaela to shortstop was the obvious move in the interim, where you could put Duran in center, mix and match with Abreu, O'Neal, and eventually Ref Snyder in the outfield. It doesn't seem like they're really keen on doing that. If there is something that it does, you know, when Grissom comes back and he starts a rehab assignment in Syracuse this weekend with the Woo Sox, if he comes back and he's your everyday second baseman no matter what, maybe Valdez goes down. He's entering the definitely not a major league player category for me. You know, I know there's some pop there, but the contact's not there at the major league level, and the glove isn't. Maybe you have Reyes play shortstop, like, more than not. I don't know. It's grasping for straws territory, but
right. You know. And it, you know, it's the classic, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, as former Red Sox general manager Lou Gorman used to talk about.
Big Heim Bloom phrase too.
Yep. You know, you could conceivably move Grissom over to short, where he played a lot in high school and coming up in the Braves system, and was actually thought of as the shortstop of the future for Atlanta. But all that does is take away a surefire solution to second base. And now you're wondering, can we get some combination of Reyes and Gonzalez to handle second base? To me, there's just not enough good major league caliber players to fill two vitally important spots in the middle of the infield. You can't cover them both. They don't have the talent right now. They don't have players capable of being everyday major leaguers at either of those positions. So they can, and I suspect will, continue to experiment and see what combination works best, but there are no easy fixes in front of them.
J.M. Wilson asked, and I kind of answered this, so I'll let you do the same. Manuel Valdez seems improved at second. Do the metrics or more expert observations bear this out? Is he nearing MLB caliber defense yet? John?
I'm not seeing it. You know, maybe a little bit of improved range over what we saw in the first half of last year. To his credit, he worked and got a little better at AAA while he was down for the summer, and then came up in August and September, and we saw some improvement. But I don't know that we're watching a capable second baseman on the major league level now. You know, he can get better and still not be good enough, and I think that's where we're at.
Charlie Weber, saw your question too. Appreciate it. Also about the shortstop and platoon situation. As I said, we got 40 questions, and like 12, 13, 14 of them are on that topic. So if you asked one and we didn't mention your name, we appreciate it. Again, I think that's the big story around this team right now. So that's what a lot of the questions were. It's not me wrapping the episode. That's just me transitioning. We have a couple questions on a guy that you and I talked about last night after the game. Masataka Yoshida. David Goblaskis asks us, last year when Yoshida started constantly hitting ground balls to the right side, we were told Masa would hit a lot of grounders when he was tired. How do the Red Sox explain it this year, this early into the season? I think that's an excellent question.
It is an excellent question to which I don't think we have.
One more on Masa, sorry, before we get into it. Mike Granger. As much as I like Masa, he doesn't really fit this team as much as I want him to. If the Sox are out of contention by the deadline and he's performing well, could he be somebody they look to move? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, certainly. He's far from untouchable. I think that the general...
Where's the value?
The consensus is that this was now an overpay to give him 5 years... and $90 million. That's a lot of money for a guy who through his defensive struggles has essentially become a full-time DH, and one who does not give you a lot of slug at that position. You know, even as the DH position evolves in 2024, where we're seeing fewer of the JD Martinez 35-year-old and plus one-dimensional hitters and run producers, you're not getting a whole lot from him. There's a lot of singles. There's not a lot of extra base power so far this year. I know he did hit a lot of doubles last year, and the expectation, you know, on opening night in Seattle, Alex Cora was very bullish on what he expected from Yoshida in that DH role full-time, said he could hit 320, Don't worry about the power. That's going to come. Frankly, I think that's wildly optimistic about what to expect here. He's not only a DH only, but he's not even being a run-producing DH. There are a lot of ground balls, a lot of singles. There's no speed. The power is average at best. You know, maybe there's some adjustments to be made. But again, we're getting into this excuse making about, well, it's going to take time. Well, he's dealing with travel like he hasn't before in Japan and all this other stuff. The guy's, you know, a year plus into the big leagues. The transition should have been adapted to by now. And if it isn't, then whose fault is that?
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is we've touched on before is he was really good early on, like a year ago. I guess a little later than now, but he had a great road trip. We went to Milwaukee. He had a couple of big hits in May. He was good, you know, and then he kind of hit the wall. But it is just a lot of grounders and rollovers to second. I mean, and that's a sign that he's not going well, but it's just like every time. And really, you know, you look for five tool players in this game, and we're talking about one tool, you know, the contact.
Bat to ball. Right.
Right. And there's no speed. The power's averaged, and he's not. And the outfield, I think, you know, is telling, you know, yeah, you know, for all that we see, you know, Masa's not that bad in left field and he can handle it and all that stuff turned out to be completely untrue because I think as P. Dave pointed out on Twitter last night, to get him into the field, they literally had to run out of players and have Reese McGuire get ejected last night to have him stand out there in left field. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's happened that makes you really like not believe a lot of what they said. Remember all the talk about rotating the DH and versatility and all that stuff. I mean, come on, the guy's literally more, he's way more of a DH only than Turner was. And well, even JD.
He's had every at bat
yeah.
as the DH. I think now, I guess there was a game where Dahlbeck got a DH start. But virtually every at bat through the first 2 weeks.
Right. But I mean, they wanted to mix whoever the DH was into the field. He's done that literally less than JD and Turner. So whatever. Relitigating GM meetings talk, which we're not here to do. But I just think in terms of trading him, you know, it would be 3 years, $54 million left after this year. That's, you know, a guy that's not going to have a lot of value. The league knows what he is at this point. I mean, I'm not so completely done on the guy after a year and a month, but it just,
it's not trending well.
He was hitting seventh earlier this week, you know, $18 million for a one-dimensional player hitting seventh. It does not look good. You know, I think that that is a big piece of this roster people don't really talk about, but kind of being a tough break for the Red Sox in a lot of ways. The offense has been...
And as we, you know, as we look at this roster, he is probably... Well, you're now have, you know, two of your three top players gone for the year in the highest paid players in Story and Giolito out. Correct me if I'm wrong. Does this not make Yoshida the second highest paid player on the team after Devers? Am I missing anybody?
I don't think so. Right.
No.
Well, oh, yeah, right. Cause he's making more than Kenley. So, and that kind of transitions to a good question from Ralph A. This year, Henry is paying for six big-ticket items. Giolito and Story are out for the year. Sales in Atlanta. Devers is off to a slow start. Yoshida is one-dimensional, and it's uncertain if Jansen ever wants to be here. Do these developments reinforce Henry's frugal approach going forward? I think there's a chicken and egg part of that. The frugal approach is the reason why Sale is in Atlanta and the reason why Jansen is pissy. So, you know, that's the effect, not the cause there. Giolito and Story, I think, you know, I think Giolito, Tony Mazza said a lot on the air on 98.5. It's bad luck that a really durable guy like that went down. I look at Story, as much as he is injury prone and has been in the last couple of years, that's kind of a real bad luck thing too. It's not like this was some weird soft tissue thing. He, you know, lunged and it was a worst case scenario the way he landed. So, I mean, I don't blame players for getting hurt. I know that's a huge pet peeve of yours. That when people do that, Devers, you know, is a superstar who's just dealing with a little bit of injury. I think Yoshida is really the only one of that group that is just on the field and not living up. I don't know. I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with that theory or line of thinking that, well, see, this is what happens when you pay players. They suck or they get injured. That's not true on a league-wide basis. It happens to be true here, but we're talking about four or five players and some freak injuries and setbacks. So if we're looking to that as disincentive to ever spend again and reinforcing John Henry's payroll constraints, then I think we're barking up the wrong tree.
Noah asks, this might be low-hanging fruit at the moment due to recency bias, but part of me wonders how much of the execution of the little things falls on Cora. Everybody thinks he's a top five manager, but the fundamentals, defense and base running, how much of that falls on him and how much of it falls on the roster? I mean, the lack of depth and the things they've tried the last couple of years, Kike, not a major league shortstop, David Hamilton, you know how I feel about that. You know, a guy in Romy Gonzalez who nobody expected to really be on the team, you know, different guys in spots and in roles they shouldn't be. You know, they've done everything to overhaul the defense. To me, you know, there are things you can blame Cora for, but he did fire like his best friend in an effort to overhaul the defense at the end of last year in Fabelais. At this point, you know, you can't blame him for David Hamilton being bad defensively and Valdez. And I don't know. I don't see it that much. I know it always falls on the manager. Go ahead.
Right. But I think that we're conflating two different issues here. We're talking about fundamentals and we're talking about poor defensive play. Those are not one and the same. And not to heap praise on Alex Cora for how things have gone the last few nights, but we're not seeing the same kind of fundamental and mental mistakes that we did last year. We're not having guys throw to the wrong base, overthrow the cutoff man, forget how many outs there are. That stuff was epidemic last year, and that stuff I do indeed place at the feet of Alex Cora. He has to be responsible for any lack of alertness or focus that his team is displaying. I'm not seeing that this year. I'm seeing guys who can't make plays or perhaps more properly aren't making plays. It's not like David Hamilton, you know, is trying to backhand a ball that he shouldn't, or Emmanuel Valdez is forgetting the number of outs or throwing to the wrong base. They're simply making physical errors. And most of the time, that's indicative of a lack of talent, not a lack of focus. So let's make the distinction between breakdowns in fundamentals and just poor defensive play.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of big picture questions. Tom Howland asking, is it time to kind of shut down Devers, punt on the season type of stuff? I think a little too early for that. Big picture questions from Justin Woolman. Are the owners still on the same strategy with the loss to Story? Michael Bryant, is the season over as a real effort from upper management? And David Uss, is there any chance that the significant injuries will force the front office to make a move to bolster pitching or the infield? We had a lot of people asking about what you wrote about today in terms of pitching depth. You know, Scott Friends asking if the Red Sox have had any contact with lower tier free agent starters with injuries stacking up like Rich Hill, you know, someone else. There's another question about that I can't find. Sorry. But it's just, I think, as I said, kind of reinforces the idea of, you know, we weren't in already. We're not going to make a panic move to try to plug holes for a team that, you know, we didn't, you know, look, they had, and this is something that people in the front office or people in the organization have cited. You know, they had a 65-1 chance of winning the World Series before. It's at 80-1 today. I checked. It's lesser, you know, even though they're above 500. Trevor Story being out, I'm sure, is the reason there. Those odds, the playoff odds, are lower. That, in their minds, says, okay, even more reason to take a step back and look at this as development. It's not panic move. Let's go get this guy. Let's go get this guy. The flawed roster, I think, is what it is. You know, I just, to think that, you know, Breslow's going to go out right now and try to get a starter, you know, maybe there's some guys with more than 1 year of control that interest him that would kind of help now. And by now, I mean, in a couple months when they make these moves and in the future. But to me, it's kind of like, you know, what they've got is what they've got, and it could be ugly.
Yeah, I think we're dealing with realism and expectations. If this were the Orioles and you were coming off a 101 win season and you had gone out and acquired Craig Kimbrell and Corbin Burns, and you see this as the year where you're ready to win, not just win the division again, but go deep into the playoffs, win the pennant, get to the World Series, have a shot of winning it all. If these things had happened to the Orioles, then yes, there would be more proactivity on the part of the baseball ops and front office and ownership. We can't let this season get away from us. Here, the expectations were far more modest. This was a building, rebridge, whatever you want to call it, transition year. And the fact that it is not starting well because of injuries and depth issues is not going to all of a sudden get ownership to make a 180-degree turn and say, you know what, we need to spend to address these issues and we need to do it in a hurry because the season's getting away from us. They weren't expecting this to be a championship caliber season. The fact that it now has the possibility of being a really poor season is not going to incentivize them to spend to get to fourth place.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. We have a couple on, you know, big picture. John McSheffrey asking, has anybody really impressed you guys so far, with maybe the exception of Tyler O'Neill's ability to hit solo homers in game openers? No one is standing out. Joseph Gleason, another big picture. Has your expectation changed for the Red Sox having a decent year, maybe making the playoffs after they've literally come back down to earth since coming back from the West Coast? To answer that, I think, you know, like we said the other day, the Trevor Story thing was so impactful and such the story of those 10 days out West that I think it completely took away the good vibes of the 7-3 start, just because of how much they were counting on him for. On John's question, who has impressed you so far? O'Neill, Duran, I think, you know, like he's a guy that people
certainly
forgot
offensively.
About. Yeah. Forgotten about during the year, and you can hide him a little in left defensively, but, you know, like game-changing speed, still has hit for average, has gotten on base, you know, and a single from him means more than a single from a lot of other players. I know that sounds stupid, but you saw it the other day. He's on first, comes around and scores on a pop-up, you know, like he's just so fast. He's so aggressive on the base pass. He's a game changer in a lot of ways. You know, I know that he had
also say that if we're looking for individual performances that have impressed us, there have been some on the pitching staff. Justin Slayton looks like a keeper. No pun intended there. They have to keep him on the roster,
right,
as a Rule 5 guy, but he looks like a, you know, someone who can be a contributor long-term. I thought he's been very impressive for someone who has obviously no big league experience. He hasn't been rattled in some big spots. He's been able to give them multiple innings on a few occasions. So, Mark, high marks there. I would say that in general, the starting rotation has been very good.
And Whitlock especially.
Right. Whitlock has had three terrific starts in a row. Even Cutter Crawford, who has struggled a couple of times in the fourth or fifth inning with his command, gets a little wild, puts some people on with walks. He's been able to get out of those kind of jams, as he did twice the other night in each of his last two innings against the Orioles. He had bases loaded jams and found a way to get out of both of them. So there is some encouragement on individual performances, but it's not enough to paper over some very real shortcomings we're seeing.
Yeah, and Houck, I mean, who pitches tonight, has not given up an earned run so far. So Houck, Crawford, Whitlock, to me, you know, have been great. You know, Bayo, pretty good, not as good as the others. Pavetta, I think, laboring in the last one, and obviously now on the IL, more of an incomplete than a grade there. McGuire has been good, I guess, if we're going to get to that part.
Yep.
You know, McGuire, again, Duran, I think, is a big standout. So, yeah, there are some individual pieces, but if you flip it and you look at the disappointments, Yoshida, Abreu, Devers, for sure. Casas, maybe a tick below what we thought there.
But he's not anybody you're worried about.
No.
You know he's going to hit and produce, and you know, his ability to hit lefties has been an improvement. He's hanging in there better against them, going the other way out of the ballpark the other night against one lefty. So those are all good signs. You don't worry about him, and you know, and 30 or so at bats so far.
few more here. We're down to less than 10 rapid fire time. Pete W., if you look at the pieces the Red Sox don't have long-term control over, what type of assets do you think they'll get back for players who fit that category? You know, there's a lot of guys who are free agents after the year that could have value. I think the goal is going to be to continue to add pitching in the minors. We saw that be the focus in the Verdugo trade with three of them. In the Urias trade, getting Campbell, a Rule 5 pick being a pitcher. You know, what's the other one? Later in the year, later in the offseason, there was yet another one where they got pitching. But these guys are all potential guys that have value. Pivetta.
The Schreiber trade.
Schreiber, yeah. Pivetta, O'Neill, Martin, Jansen. If they're bad, those guys are good as gone. And, you know, I was saying yesterday as we were talking, maybe you package Martin and Jansen together for a team that really needs bullpen help and get a good prospect. If O'Neill is still hitting well, you could get value for him. Pivetta, you know, so like I do look at them targeting pitching there. Paul Dumond asked, do we see more extensions soon? Was Rafael a big surprise to you guys? Nope. We had been hearing it for about 7 or 8 days before it broke. And, you know, that's, I guess, a little bit of a surprise in the way that that was the guy they identified, but it had been kind of, you know, talked about for a little bit. Craig Breslow saying the other day, no extensions are imminent at this point. You know, it seems like nothing's going to get done here. They usually table things during the offseason, but I think we both agree. When those talks do start up again next offseason, there's one target and one main target only.
Yeah, that's to get Casas done, obviously. And that will not be easy by everything we're hearing and reading. You know, Casas is a guy who has a definite sense of his own self-worth. He has expectations for himself, and he's not about to sign away his next 4 or 5 years and some free agent years at less than what market value is as he perceives it. So if they do get that done next offseason, it's going to require an adjusted proposal because from everything we've heard, they did not come close to tempting him to buy out those years, but that should absolutely be their primary focus of all the players who have, you know, 0 to 3 years of service time on the roster.
Nathan Foxman with an outside the box question. Besides the obvious consistent cameras and crew around, is there anything super different with the Netflix doc this season? Have the players and coaches really embraced it more than others? I mean, I just say, I think those guys are omnipresent. They're there at all times. I was talking to a security guard yesterday who said they have, you know, completely unfiltered access no matter what they want, where they want. Doesn't have to scan them into the clubhouse. We have an hour before the game. They have every waking moment of every day. And so I think that's interesting. Obviously, the Red Sox can find ways to have super private conversations away from them. There are days where the crew is not there. There are union restrictions where sometimes the Netflix people do not have their crew there. And so it's not every waking moment of every day during the season, but when
they're not going to travel a whole lot. They'll be on the road at times, kind of cherry picking some big series, but they will not be there for 162 games. They are there for virtually every home game. But I think one of the benefits, if you will, of getting that process started in spring training was to acclimate the players to look, you know, this is how it's going to be in May, June, July, August, September, the whole year. So get used to it. And I think for the most part, players have. And after a certain amount of time, you stop recognizing that they're there. They're just part of the background now, which is probably exactly what, you know, Greg Whiteley, the executive producer of the series, wants. He wants to be a fly on the wall and to capture what's going on a daily basis during a baseball season. And I think they're probably at that point now where the players barely notice that the crew is there.
Yeah, and, you know, tough for them because a lot of the storylines they probably even were looking at have dissolved. The story comeback, the Giolito comeback, all those types of things. You know, I don't know what they're going to go for and what we're going to see in February. But in terms of storylines, it's not the perfect situation for them. We'll end here with Blake Montecino. What's the pathway back for the Red Sox to be good again? They pay players like Sale and Story and they get hurt. Obviously, there's the top prospects, but how do they successfully supplement those players? I think there's, you know, theoretically, a lot of guys you can fit in position player-wise to a lot of spots. and there's some starters with potential. I think in the offseason, it's the same as it was when we entered the winter, and the promises and the BS about full throttle. Front line starting pitching, go get yourself an ace or two. Spend there. If the guy gets hurt, you know, that's an occupational hazard. It's part of it. It's just part of it in this game. That still remains to me, as you look at the roster moving forward, a big piece. You know, theoretically, if you think about Teal, Casas, Grissom, Story, Meyer, Devers, Anthony. Duran, Abreu, Anthony, Rafaela, that's like 10 or 11 position players who are going to be a core, around the core for a long time. You know, with Crawford, Bayo, Whitlock, Houck under control, like there are talented players in a lot of places, but they need some moves to put themselves over the top. And I think pitching again will be the way to do it.
Yeah, I would differ a little bit. I would say the road back and the path to building a winning team is to improve the pitching development program. That means at the major league level, so guys like Crawford and Houck and Whitlock emerge into at least average major league starters at the back end, 3, 4, 5. You already have in Bayo a guy that you think can be certainly a number two, if not a number one. Giolito's gone. He's done for the year. But they have to, I think, as you hinted at, augment what they are able to produce internally. I do think at some point the team will re-enter the free agent sweepstakes when they are at a point where they think there are difference makers who can put them over the top. You will see them either signing a frontline free agent starter or trading for one using some of that prospect inventory. But in my mind, their primary focus is on improving that pitching development pipeline so that you don't have to go out into the free agent market for two or three starters, but rather just one.
Yep, and that'll be in the next time we have the offseason discussion, which will be in about 7 months. So something to look forward to. Appreciate all your questions. I know we didn't get to all of them, but again, there is 40-plus, a lot of overlap, and we can't do a two-hour show. We'll leave that up to Section 10, inexplicably. Sean, thanks again for everybody's answers. Tell everybody one more time where you can submit questions for episodes like this one.
Yep, the next time we do this, which will probably be in a couple of weeks, you need to be part of the Red Sox Insider text program to be able to contribute questions and have them read on the show. And to do that, text the word join to 617-751-6257. After that, click the link to subscribe. You will get a free introductory, no cost or obligation, 14-day trial period, after which you'll pay $4.99 per month.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.